We're going to today, in order to prepare for Pesach, is we're going to share five Divrei Torah that are Seoverable Divrei Torah. I find that a lot of the Divrei Torah that we have for the Seder are not necessarily Seoverable. They're just like really amazing ideas, but the Seder is a time of sharing, a time of like questions and answers. And all five Divrei Torah will be from Haggadah that I really love. It's called the Eish Tamid Haggadah, Yisrael Meir Druk. Shlomo Meir Druk is a Rav today, alive and well in Eretz Yisrael. He was a Chavrusa of Rav Chaim Kanievsky. And there are those that say, I heard the story last week, that when Rav Chaim died just a little bit over a year ago, he literally had a heart attack when he heard the news that his Chavrusa and Rebbe passed away, Rav Chaim Kanievsky. He has Tvarim and Chumash that I fall in love with. They're just so beautiful. And he really asks questions that are very different generally than the typical classic questions that you see. And the Torah is a little bit different. So we're going to discuss two on the Ka'ara itself. So when we get into the Seder itself, we have the Ka'ara. And on the Ka'ara, we have the Zroa. So why do we have the Zroa? What is that in remembrance to? What is that for? Anyone know?
Korban Pesach.
Korban Pesach. Thank you. The classic go-to reason as to why we have the Zroa there is for the Korban Pesach. It should be roasted, just like the Korban Pesach was roasted. Many people use a shankbone, some people use a chicken wing. It's all good. And it's there to remember what was in the past that we used to, and please God, very, very soon, we will once again have a Korban Pesach, and that will be the central focus point of the Seder. The Torah says that this is in remembrance of the Zroa Netuya. What does the Zroa Netuya mean? God's outstretched hand. Hashem doesn't have hands, but Ki'ilu Lahavdil, the way that us mere mortals can understand it, is that God stretched out his hand to help us and save the Jewish people from our 210 years in servitude. But Rav Druk now takes this to a place that I had never seen anyone else take this before. And he says the following. If you think about it, there was another outstretched hand that took place in the entire story of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. What other outstretched hand do we have?
Basya.
More accurately, in Divrei Yamim, her name is Bat Paro in Shmos, and Bitya. She, according to Chazal, was like a Fantastic Four character, and stretched out her arm. She saw baby Moshe crying in the Nile, and she stretched out her hand. Did she literally stretch out her hand? The Gemara Sota says that's what in fact happened. Others say the Midrash is pointing at something else, is that when somebody says, I have my hands all over it, what does that mean? I'm in control of what's happening here. Batya was a daughter of Hitler, Ki'ilu, right? Yimach Shemo. Hitler wanted to kill all the Jews. Paro wanted to murder all of the baby boys. His daughter is saving Jewish children. That's like really dangerous, right? It's embarrassing for him. And who knows, he's a nut. He can even murder his daughter. Who knows? She has to have complete control over the situation and ensure that nobody, right, until the time is right, maybe, share who this baby it really is. That she's saving Jewish children, and this spreads, it's going to really not look good for Paro. So maybe what it means is that she stretched out her hand, that she was like in control of the situation. But think about it, Rav Druk says, an outstretched hand. Maybe this is why we have the Zroa on the Ka'ara, to bring Batya or Bitya to the Seder, to remind us that we can't, make sure. We can't have a Seder without remembering, right, how we got there to begin with. Without Moshe, we would have no Yetzias Mitzrayim. Without Bitya, we would have no Moshe, right? So we need to remember that. And if you think about it, what did she do in essence, right? So many people probably walked by and saw a crying baby and did nothing. And who knows what she could have accomplished. But all she did was essentially say, how can I help? What can I do to help? She tried. She stretched out her arm, and it kept on going and going and going. And Rav Druk says that is such an important mussar for all of us, because in our lives, sometimes we say, Who am I? What can I do? I can't really do anything. Can't accomplish, can't do. So at the very least, I'll just try a little bit. And he says something amazing. If you flip around the letters of the word Zeroa, what do you get? Ozer. What's an Ozer? A helper, right? Melech Ozer Moshiach Umagen. That Batya's whole essence of how she saved Moshe was really just to say, how am I going to help? That's it. And that's what she did. So that is thought number one from Udruk. The Zeroa is bringing Bitya Bas Paro to the Seder. Two from the Kara. Secondly, we have the Beitza. Some people, who eats the egg here at the in the Seder? Anyone eat the egg? Ruthie, just you?
Right before
Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch, yeah. Okay, the Ramaku, it's a minhag that we eat the egg. Some people do, some people don't. I don't like it, I do like it. We also eat the eggs at the Seder. I have to have the yolk. I don't think you have to have the yolk. You don't have to have a shear of the egg. It's all good. It's a nice minhag to have the egg. So why do you have the egg? Why does that belong there? So this actually goes in tandem with the Zeroa. If you think about it, you have a big Seder. You have, I don't know, 10, 15, 20 people at your Seder. You only have one Korban Pesach, and everybody has to have a kezais to the Pesach in order to be yotzi their mitzvah. There might not be a lot of meat. Hi, girls. There might not be a lot of meat left over for everybody else to eat. So what do? The Gemara says, you bring a chagiga. You bring another korban to ensure, right, that everybody's going to have to eat. The worst thing that a Jewish mother can have is if somebody's going to leave the Pesach Seder, say, I'm still hungry. That's like a disaster. That's literally a nightmare. It's a nightmare. So you have the korban chagiga, and you bring another korban to show I have enough food for everybody, right? And they feed everybody from the two korbanos. So the Zeroa is Zecher leKorban Pesach, and the Beitza is Zecher leChagiga. Zecher leChagiga. So now that is the go-to reason as to what is happening here. He quotes two additional reasons, which are really beautiful, each one on their own. The first is the Mishnah Berurah. The Mishnah Berurah says, right, you think the Mishnah Berurah is all about halacha. So the way that you say Beitza in Aramaic is Beya. Maybe some of your brothers are learning Maseches Beya in school. Beya is Bez Yud Ayin Aleph. Beya is an egg in Aramaic. But Beya in Aramaic also has another connotation, another meaning. It also means tefillah. Tefillah. And there's a pasuk in Yeshayahu that uses the word Beya as an expression of tefillah. And he says, really, if you think about it, how did the Jewish people get out of Egypt? What caused Moshe Hashem to go to Moshe? So it's very, very clear, if you learn the psukim in Parsha Shemos, is that the Jewish people began davening. They began davening, and it's once they started davening, did Hashem come to Moshe in the burning bush, and this all kickstarted the whole thing. There are many points over the course of the Seder where it's really opportunities to daven. In my family, we take time when we open up the door for Eliyahu Navi, we don't like Tehillim, but you stop there, and it's a time to daven for the Geula, for the national Geula, for all of us. But really, we all go through Geulas on our own, that we all need redemptions from things in our own lives, and it's a great opportunity to daven there. That is, so Beitza Chagiga, Beitza davening, one more from the Chasam Sofer. The Chasam Sofer says that a Beitza is like Klal Yisrael. The Jewish people are compared to the Beitza. Most foods, if you cook them, what happens to them? The more you cook them, the softer they get. They eventually crumble into pieces. Not so with the egg. The more you cook the egg, the harder it gets. Right? The Jewish people are the same way. No matter how many times Jewish people have gotten knocked down in our history, it just makes us stronger. We shouldn't have to get knocked down. But when it happens, it usually leads to tremendous growth from the Jewish people, from Klal Yisrael. Okay, that's idea number two. We first had from the Zeroa and Batya. Beitza is either the egg. What is the egg? Doma la Klal Yisrael. It's for tefillah or the Korban Chagiga. And now, this is something I actually was looking into last week, one night. I was curious. What do we call the first night of Pesach? What do we call it? Leil HaSeder, right? Actually, it has a few different names. Pesach, as you guys know very well, I hope so, that the holiday itself has four different names, right? The night of Seder, the first night of Pesach, is called Leil Shimurim in the Torah. And then we don't call it Leil Shimurim, it's called Leil HaSeder. Those words do not appear in the Mishnah or in the Gemara. And it's called Leil HaSeder. Actually a fascinating language. It's a night of order. Usually when you associate freedom, you don't associate freedom with structure and order and stages and steps. It's usually it's associated with like, do whatever I want. It doesn't matter what I do. But here it's Seder. Where does it come from? Why is it called Leil HaSeder? It's a funny language. So the Kolbo gives the simplest understanding is that there's an order to the night. There's a structure, there's a rhythm to the night. Kadesh, Orchatz, Karpas, Yachatz. You have to go in a certain order. And theoretically, some of the stages, if you did them out of order, you got to do them again. Right? You got to throw that flag, you got to do them again. The Maharal says something different. The Maharal, very beautifully, says that if you were living in Egypt at the time, either as a Jew or as an Egyptian, like every few weeks, there's like another plague. First, the water turns to blood, and then there's locusts, and there's dead animals, you know, polar bears entering the sphere of Egypt. And like, you look at everything, you're like, this is crazy. The word we use is like, it's cacophonous, it's wild, it's out of control. Right? That's the way you would look at what's happening here. But really, behind the scenes, HaKadosh Baruch Hu knew exactly what was going on. There was a Seder HaDvarim, not that we were able to see, but Hashem was able to see. And so often in life, we look at the world, we read the news, and you're like, the world is insane, right? The world is out of control. Yes, from our view, that's right, it is. Hashem, Kadosh Baruch Hu, has a plan. So it's called Leil HaSeder to remind us that as much as the world is out of control, Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, has a plan. Nisfas Emes. Am I going speaking too fast? We're good? No. Am I going too quick?
No.
No? Good? Nisfas Emes, this Rabbi Goldberg shared with me, and it's actually in Rabbi Druk quotes Nisfas Emes as well, is that what was out of order, that now it's in order? The Jewish people. When the Jewish people were enslaved in Egypt, the world itself was off its course. The world itself was not right. What the world needs is for the Jewish people to be free and to be in Eretz Israel and to be an influence to the rest of the world. When we are being subjugated by the Egyptians, it's lo mesudar. It's not in the right order. It's not going okay. And that's what it means. Leil HaSeder, that now that we are free, things can get back on track. Okay. We've already mentioned five ideas from Rav Druk. You bring Rav Druk to your Seder, I'd be really honored. I'm sure he would as well. The first is from the Zroa. The Zroa is Bitya to Seder. Beitza, the more you knock them down, the stronger we get. Seder, there's something lo misudar. Either we, from our mere perspective as human beings, we don't realize things. And Kadosh Baruch Hu brought things back in order. The fourth, and this is really, I saw this last year, this like got me emotional personally, okay? We read about the five rabbis and the Pesach program that took place in Bnei Brak. I don't know in Bnei Brak if they had a tea room or if they had like Shweki or Mordechai Shapiro. I don't know who came to their program. But there are five rabbis, thank you, Simi, for laughing. And there are five rabbis that were there. There's Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Rabbi Akiva, and Rabbi Tarfon, who are Bnei Brak. If you visit Bnei Brak today, one of the main streets in Bnei Brak is called Rehov Rabbi Akiva. Why? Bnei Brak was Rabbi Akiva's hometown. It's probably not exactly where it is today. It was probably a little bit further away, but relatively close enough to the ancient Bnei Brak. So everybody asks, why is everybody coming to Rabbi Akiva? At that point, Rabbi Akiva was not the Gadol Hador. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah might have been. Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua were older than Rabbi Akiva, and they were his seniors. So why was everybody coming to Bnei Brak? So that's the question that people generally ask, showing how Rav Druk asks different questions. So the answer to that question is very, very beautiful, that the Aruch HaShulchan, have we learned the Aruch HaShulchan this past year? Right, the Aruch HaShulchan, Rabbi Chiel Michal Epstein, is known mainly for his halacha. He has a Haggadah too, right? You can't be a rabbi without having a Haggadah. It's like, you got to do it. So in the YU library, in the fifth floor, they have one long row just of Haggadahs. It's like amazing. And he wrote a Haggadah called Leil Shimurim. And in there, he says, they went to Rabbi Akiva. You know why? He was their Rebbe in positivity. Rabbi Akiva was always optimistic. He was always hopeful, you know, about the Jewish people. So they needed this more than anything else. And that's why they went to him, because he was their Rebbe. Rav Druk asks a different question. He says, what is unique about these five rabbis? Why are they getting together? What is unique about all of them? And he says the following. He says that everybody, right, who was in Bnei Brak, all had personal challenges that they went through in their own lives. And they came together for Leil HaSeder to get chizuk from one another. It's amazing. And he says, if you go through the list, and he quotes Chazals from all over the place. This is not actually from, he quotes, it's not his own Chiddush. He quotes Rav Yashif, who says this, that Rabbi Eliezer did not grow up religious. He didn't even know how to recite Kriyat Shema. And when he decided to become frum, his parents were against him. They didn't want it. And they gave him a very, very hard time until he was known as Rabbi Eliezer HaGadol, right? Rabbi Yeshua was extremely poor. That within itself presents its own challenges. Learning, focusing on Torah when you have so many other responsibilities, can't put food on the table. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, we read about right after this, that he became the Nasi of the Jewish people, leader of the Jewish people, at a very young age. He was 18 years old. And guess what? People didn't believe in him. They didn't want him to be the Nasi. And he struggled a lot with confidence. Rabbi Tarfon, fascinatingly, was uber wealthy. He was very, very wealthy. The Gemara says he had lots of different homes, different, you know, and everyone here thinks that's amazing. But wealth also was a challenge. Marbe nechasim, marbe daiga. That itself can be a challenge. And lastly, Rabbi Akiva, we know, there's so much about Rabbi Akiva. What he focused on here is when Rabbi Akiva got married to his wife. Anyone know his wife's name?
Rachel.
It's a great book. And Rachel was his wife. No, it's a good book, Ms. Davis. Best book. It's classic. It's definitely a classic. And when they got married, her father did not approve of this marriage. Her father also was a major landowner. His name was Kalba Savua. And swore off his daughter and son-in-law that they cannot benefit from any money or any property that he owns. And they literally lived in a hut for many, many years. So these five rabbis, each one of them went through their own personal struggles and was extremely resilient in their own lives, struggling with all these different things, whether it's confidence, wealth, poverty, challenges within their families, things that I think we all can relate to. And they came together to get chizuk from one another. This goes to show you that, these rabbis are human beings. They also have struggles. We all really have struggles in our own lives. And one way to get through them is with other people. Is that friends that you can confide in, to talk to, and to get chizuk from. And that is so, so important in life. The last idea comes from Seul Amad. Seul Amad is maybe I'll do a six because I see where we're going quick. Seul Lamad is really the main part of the Haggadah. The main part of the Haggadah is to talk about Yetzias Mitzrayim. And a lot of these stories that we just mentioned, or really the Maaseh Pirlei Elazar and the Ruzim Azariah, you know, turning gray at a very young age. And then, you know, it's really like, it's like we call it like meta. It's not the story, but it's a story about the story. It's like a little bit funny why it's there. And then the main part is when we start talking about Yetzias Mitzrayim. And at that point, everyone's like, come on, hurry up. Because we heard your Divrei Torah Manashtana. We heard your Divrei Torah on Halach Ma'anya. Someone, you know, spilled wine and had to go change their dress. You know, it's like already a mess, right? And now it's like Seul Lamad. That's like the main part. You're like, let's go. Got to move. So it's very, very important to spend time discussing the actual servitude. And this really is comprised of four psukim. The four psukim that are recited by a farmer when he brings his bikurim to the Kohen in the Beis HaMikdash. The truth is there are five psukim that are recited. We only use four. And there he has a retrospective where he tells a story about the Jewish people and what eventually brought them to Eretz Yisrael. And it's those psukim that we literally like squeeze out every detail and every nuance to understand what exactly was happening in Mitzrayim. It's fascinating that we use those psukim. We don't use our own. Just one more point. We call it Leil HaSeder. This is Rav Druk. And it just ties into what we're about to say. That there's four methods in which we can learn Torah. Four layers of Torah. Rabbi Yudin likes to say all the time that the Torah is like an onion. An onion has layers. Shrek also, no? Has layers. So, and the Torah has many layers. And the way we usually say it is, it's an acronym called Pardes. Pei, Reish, Dalet, Samech. What does that mean? Yeah, Mira?
Remez, no, Pardes. Yeah.
Pshat, Remez, Rash, Sod. Now, Seder, what's Seder? Pshat is literal translation. Remez is hints. Drash is a drasha. And Sod is secret, like Kabbalah. The Seder is Sod, Drash, Remez. He says, that's another, why Leil HaSeder? Why? Because there's so many things deeper going on at Leil HaSeder that it's hard for us to even comprehend. Sod, Drash, and Remez. Now, one of the first things we say is Vayareu Osanu Hamitzrim. What do those words mean? Vayareu Osanu Hamitzrim. So literally means, we'll argue that it's not literal, but the way it's translated is the Jewish people, were oppressed by the Egyptians. Yes. The Egyptians oppressed us. Vayareu Osanu Hamitzrim. Many understand this is Vayareo Sanu Hamitzrim, they made us look evil. Egypt was the most sophisticated society in those days. Economically, it was the strongest, most powerful society. How can a society such as Egypt go ahead and start murdering babies in the streets? Vayareu Osanu Hamitzrim. They made us look evil. Right? They convinced everybody that we were bad. Rabbi Soloveitchik, it's Rabbi Soloveitchik's 30th Yahrzeit, this upcoming Chol HaMoed Pesach. Rav Schechter has a Haggadah that was written by one of his students, Dr. Alan Weissman. And he writes there in the Haggadah, quoting the Rav, that what does it mean they looked evil? Is that Paro convinced the Egyptians that we, the Jewish people, we're not patriotic. We didn't care about Egypt. And if people would come to attack Egypt in a war, we would not help the Egyptians. We would side with the other side, which wasn't true, right? Wasn't true. We had a lot of Akar Satov to Egypt. But that within itself was enough to slowly convince the Jewish people, the Egyptians, that we were bad and we needed to get rid of us. Now, but he says the following. He adds to this something so beautiful. What is Vayareu Osanu Hamitzrim? You have to think about what we went back to. Who in this pasuk is talking? The farmer, right, is talking in the Beis HaMikdash to the Kohen. Vayareu osanu hamitzrim has a deeper meaning here. It's not that only he made the Jews look evil, the Jews unpatriotic. Osanu, he's in the Beis HaMikdash. He's talking about me and Hashem. That Paro convinced them that the God of the Jews was also evil, also wanted to do bad things. And that is the message here of Vayareu Osanu. I think it's a very important discussion to have as you guys get older and more sophisticated. You could appreciate the Haggadah and the story on a deeper level, on a more realistic thing. What happened here? It wasn't like we just woke up one day and power started, made us slaves. Like, that doesn't happen in a regular society. It can't happen that way. It happens in a slower, methodological way, and that's what happened here. The Abraham J. Twersky, this is an extra overtime points over here. Rabbi Dr. Twersky passed away unfortunately a few years ago. He has a great Haggadah in English, and he writes, he quotes Hasidic Rebbes, who say something else. Vayareo sanu, right? How did we get so assimilated? And from the word rea, v'hafta l'reacha kamocha, the Egyptians befriended us. Vayareo sanu hamitzrim, they befriended us. There are two ways to get rid of the Jewish people. There are two different types of attacks that we experience. One type of attack is what happened, lo aleinu, in the Holocaust. They literally murdered millions and millions of our brothers and sisters, our great-parents, grandparents, great-great-grandparents, etc., etc. The other way is through assimilation, is through being too connected to everybody to the point where we lose our Jewish identity completely, and it completely goes off the wayside. That, fortunately, over the last 75 years, millions of Jews have also been lost as a result of that, quite literally. And that is another message here, Vayireo Osanu HaMitzrim. So we have five Divrei Torah, five thoughts of the Haggadah from Rabbi Druk. One is the Zroa Netuya. We're bringing Bitya to the Seder to be an Ozer. There are four words that you should be using for the next week more than any other words. And that is, how can I help, right? You can learn that from Batya Bas Paro, right? That's what she did. She helped a little bit, and it changed the trajectory of the Jewish people. What's the Beitza for? To remind us, it's also a Leil Tefillah. It's a night of davening. No matter how much we get knocked down, we're going to grow as a result of it. A Seder, something is Lo Misudar. That's why it's called a Seder. The answer of the Maharal, the Sfas Emes, or the creative approach of Sod, Drash, and Remez. Why were these five rabbis together in Bnei Brak? What unified them? Resilience. They needed to come together to get chizik from one another. And finally, Vayireo Osanu HaMitzrim, different approaches to this beautiful idea. Either they made us evil because we're unpatriotic, or they befriended us so much that caused tremendous assimilation.